Shanti Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we'll read from 15th chapter, text 14. The chapter is entitled The Yoga of the Supreme Person. Aham Vishwanaro Bhutva Praninam Deham Ashritaham Pranapana Samayuktam Pachamiyanam Chaturvidham Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva Praninam Deham Ashritaham Pranapana Samayuktam Pachamiyanam Chaturvidham. Aham Vishwanaro Bhutva Praninam Deham Ashritam Pranapana Samayukta Pachamyanam Chaturvidham. Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva Praninam Deham Ashrita Pranapana Samayukta Pachamyanam Chaturvidham. Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva Praninam Deham Ashrita Pranapana Samayukta Pachamyanam Chaturvidham. Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva Praninam Deham Ashrita Pranapana Samayukta Pachamyanam Chaturvidham. Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva Praninam Deham Ashrita Pranapana Samayukta Pachamyanam Chaturvidham. Aham, I, Vaishvanaraham, my planetary portion as the digesting fire. Bhutvam, becoming. Praninam, of all living entities. Deham, in the bodies. Ashritaham, situated. Prana, the outgoing air. Apana, the downgoing air. Samayuktaham, keeping in balance. Pachami, I digest. Anam, foodstuff. Chaturvidham, the four kinds. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. I am the fire of digestion in the bodies of all living entities, and I join with the air of life, outgoing and incoming, to digest the four kinds of foodstuff. According to Ayurvedic Shastra, we understand that there is a fire in the stomach which digests all food sent there. When the fire is not blazing, there is no hunger, and when the fire is in order, we become hungry. Sometimes when the fire is not going nicely, treatment is required. In any case, this fire is representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vedic mantras, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 5.9.1, also confirm that the Supreme Lord, or Brahman, is situated in the form of fire within the stomach and is digesting all kinds of foodstuff. Ayam agnir vaishvanaro yo yam manta purushe yedam. yenedam anam pachyate. Therefore, since he is helping the digestion of all kinds of foodstuff, the living entity is not independent in the eating process. Unless the Supreme Lord helps him in digesting, there is no possibility of eating. He thus produces and digests foodstuff, and by his grace we are enjoying life. In the Vedanta Sutra 1.2.27, this is also confirmed. Shabdabhidyo ntah pratishthanachcha. The Lord is situated within sound and within the body, within the air, and even within the stomach as a digestive force. There are four kinds of foodstuff. Some are swallowed, some are chewed, some are licked up, and some are sucked. And he is the digestive force for all of them. Om Jnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamiti Namine. Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine. Panchatatvatmakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Sarupakam Bhaktavatara Bhaktakyam Namami Bhaktashaktikam. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Nilamani Jagatpati Gopisha Gopika Kantaradha Kantanamustute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Brindavanishwari Vrishabhanu Suti Devi Pranamami Hari Priye. Krishna is the maintainer of the universe, we have heard before. He is assisting the creation, the maintenance, and the destruction. So this is one example in what way he's directly helping that we are, that it's possible for us to live. So this is another example here. Krishna is digestive. The power of digestion, that is Krishna. Krishna. So power of digestion. Without, if our power of digestion is weak, basically we are not even aware that we are doing that. We are aware of chewing and swallowing the food. We are aware of what kind of food we like, what kind of food we don't like. But we are not aware of the process, the process of digesting the food. So this power for digesting the food, that is Krishna, is stated here. If the power of digestion is weak, then we don't feel hunger. When we feel hungry, when we're hungry, this means that power of digestion is strong. Sometimes you see when people are sick, there's some problem there. There's some health problem. Some people, when they're very nervous, stressed out, they lose the hunger. There's no more hunger. This is not a good symptom. And sometimes, if it's extreme, it should be treated. And sometimes, when the fire is not balanced, then there is constipation or some other form, not very nice thing to have, because of the fire of digestion is not in order. Here there is one very nice principle Prabhupada is mentioning in the purport. Yeah, first of all, fire, yeah, representative of Godhead. And this is also confirmed in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad and Vedanta Sutra. This is kind of interesting for us to know, because these are Bhagavad Gita, Upanishads, and Vedanta Sutras are the accepted scriptures by all Vedanta schools. So basically, we are also one of the Vedanta schools. Philosophy. So these all three books confirm, so should be something there. The principle I wanted to to mention here is that the Lord is the maintainer, protector, and the Lord is taking care of things. So this is one thing that we can learn from this. Without our knowledge, the Lord manifests in our body as digesting fire, so that we can maintain our bodies, we can eat nicely. This is the show of His opulence, of His grace, we can say. Basically, I don't know which direction to go right now, because there's many examples in what ways Krishna is taken care of, how His Vatsalya is manifest. If you remember, this morning we discussed a little bit about this, and on Chaitanya Charitamrita class, there was mention of the Lord having Vatsalya, being the protector, being caretaker, being maintainer, or being concern for someone, in connection to His devotee. There's also other examples. I like this example because it shows how it's a nice illustration how Krishna is involved in everything, all the universal affairs, also smallest things. Krishna is involved in the smallest things. One of the previous verses, just the previous verse. Says, I enter into each planet and by my energy they stay in orbit. So Krishna states here one cosmological thing, that He is involved in universal affairs. As He is in our stomach and He's digesting fire, He's also within the planets and between the planets, so that they can, His magnetism, His life. In this way He's maintaining, He's protecting, His Vatsalya is manifest here, we can see. The story from 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is very nice illustration in how the Lord is always helping, how the Lord is always protecting, whether someone is a believer or maybe someone is not a believer. Whether we like it or not, the Lord is present in our lives. The fact that things exist, that movements are there, that is due to the Lord's presence. He is all pervasive, and through His energies or personally, He's involved in everything. Once upon a time, long time ago, a story here. There was Bali, great demon, who managed to conquer the heavens. Heaven. What happened was he became very powerful because he was following the instructions of Brahmanas. Himself, he was Kshatriya, warrior king, grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. But he wasn't really a devotee of Krishna. He was learned in all different kinds of knowledge, but he wasn't really devoted to Krishna. He conquered the heavenly planets, and Adityas, the sons of Aditi, they had to run away from their homes because they couldn't stop Bali with his army. It's described that when he appeared in the heaven, he appeared so fearful. His tongue was swinging to all directions very fiercely. He was like terrible to see. He was very angry, and he wanted to throw out the residents of heaven. And that he was successful at that. And then what happened was the demigods, Indra, Vayu, Agni, they were controlled by him. And they had to hide their form. They had to hide away. Otherwise, they might be in danger. If he would suspect that they're trying to conspire against him, he might cause them a lot of trouble. Perhaps was even able to kill them. So, mother of Adityas. Adityas are because their mother is Aditi. And Daityas are because their mother is Diti. And they have the same husband. Kashyapa. Kashyapa has more wives, and two of them are, one of them is Diti and one is Aditi. Diti is mother of the demons, those who conquered the heaven in our story from Srimad Bhagavatam. And Aditi is the one who is the mother of demigods. So demigods were in trouble. So what to do now? They went to Brihaspati, their priest, very qualified, exalted personality. And they said, we want to fight, we want to defeat them. How to defeat them? Instruct us, tell us how to fight the demons so we can destroy them. We can throw them out of our kingdom, which is rightfully ours. And Brihaspati said, no, you cannot fight them now. What you can do is, you can get some time. You can wait for some time. And then after some time, their time will be over. Their strength will go, they will become weaker. But don't fight them now, because if you fight them now, you will not be able to win the battle. But if you fight them later, then you will be able to defeat them. So what to do? Churn the ocean of milk. And when you will churn the ocean of milk, you will get the nectar of immortality out of that churning. Oh, how we're supposed to do that? And the nectar of milk is so huge. Where will we get churning rod? How can we do that? It's not enough of us that we could churn the ocean of milk. Brihaspati said, that is the catch. You invite the demons to help you. You say that result is there. We will split the result, nectar immortality, on half for us, half for us. And in this way, we will together try to do the churning and accomplish the goal. So demigods, they went to demons and said, we have a proposal here. Look, we know one thing. We go to ocean of milk, and we churn the ocean of milk, and from that ocean of milk, nectar of immortality will come, and we'll split it in half, and then everyone will be satisfied. The demons were saying, oh yeah, this is not a bad proposal. Let's use demigods. Now they told us their secret. Let's use us. Then when we get the nectar, then we'll just fight with them, defeat them, and take all of the nectar, and we will become very, very powerful, million times more powerful than now. And the demigods were thinking, by that time, the time will come, and we'll be able to confront the demons, and we'll take all the nectar, and we'll become much more powerful. So the demons said, okay, shake hands, let's go. They arrived to the ocean of milk. Whew, how will we churn this? This is like a big thing. And then, let's take Mandara Mountain. Was it Mandara Mountain? A big mountain, which is, or was it the other one? I forgot. Let's say Mandara. I mean, we can check the details, but I forgot the exact. Was it Mandara or was it the other one? Because there's few famous great mountains in the universe. So one of those mountains is tall. Mountain. Let's get Mandara Mountain. And then the demons and demigods, they went, yes, let's go. And they couldn't move the mountain they couldn't. I said, together we could, you know, it's like just grab and move to another place. We're like, many of them very powerful. Not possible, they couldn't move. Hacha, what to do? You know, this is really a difficult task. We thought it would be easy. Supposed to be easy. We are both powerful demons, powerful demigods, all together. All the force of the universe on one place cannot move. One mountain, up. They were expecting that they could do it, but it didn't happen. They were trying. And then the Lord appeared, Krishna, in the form of many arms. In a wonderful form he appeared, and he was the one who put the mountain in the middle of the ocean of milk. And he sat on top to keep the balance so that the mountain wouldn't go one side or the other. And then, so what to do now? We don't have churning rod. Oh my God, churning rod. Okay, let's find the biggest snake in the universe, Vasuki, and bring Vasuki in, and we'll use Vasuki for churning rod. Okay, Vasuki come, and they pull the Vasuki around, and demigods, demons, they said, demigods said, which... We want to take the head. Which side do you want to take? No, we want to take the tail. Which side do you want to take? And the demon said, if they want to take the tail, must be some trick there. No, what was it? Anyway, there was a trick, so the demons got the head, right? The demigods were like smart, and they said, why don't we take the tail? Oh no, let's just ask demons. What do they think? And demons, they said, if they want to take the head, must be something, you know. So they took the head, the demons, they took the head. And while they tried to, they started, the Vasuki was a little bit, you know, in uncomfortable position, right? And start to vomit fire, because Vasuki have many, many hoods, and Vasuki can vomit fire. And then many demons were just wiped out. And then what happened was then Kurma came, another form of the Lord, and supported the churning rod. So far we have two forms of Krishna here. One is on top, which moved the mountain. The other one is from the bottom, which is holding the mountain up. Okay, so now they're trying. Nothing moves. They're trying. They're pulling. We will churn the ocean. Nothing happens. What's this? Churning is not happening. We cannot move anything. And the Lord sees this, because the Lord is present everywhere, in the hearts of every soul. Ramanujacharya gives one interesting point here. I don't know if our acharyas accept this, but Ramanuja is very close in philosophy to our acharyas. So he says that within the soul there is Krishna. Every soul, within the soul there is Krishna. I think I recall Srila Prabhupada mentioning that Krishna can be smaller than the smallest. Even within the small, tiny soul, he can be present. So he is present in many different ways. And he is already present in two different forms. Vishnu is famous to manifest in different forms, different avatars, different forms. None of the demigods is famous, or other gods is famous to have multiple forms. We know Indra looks, he has eyes all over his body. And then different demigods, Ganesh always similar form. We don't see, this is this type, Ganesh is that, or Hanuman is one specific thing is there. But when you look at Krishna, then you see there's so many different types. Prabhu is just finding a picture of 12 different, a picture which shows just previous. Can you give me the book, please? Don't close it. Don't. Oh, you have the same book. Okay. Okay, so this is 12 different forms of Krishna. Here, this one. So that's Dasavatara. So if you look, this is page, it's somewhere in the pictures. So if you look, there's each of the incarnations, they're completely, totally different. We have here Matsyavatar, we have, what is this? Korma, oh yeah, this is Korma, right? And there's Varaha, there's Nrisimha, there's Vamana, there's Parashuram, there's Sitaram, there's Krishna Balaram, there's Buddha, and there's Kalki. There's Krishna, of course, Krishna Balaram, Krishna, Radha Krishna. So Krishna appears in different forms for different purposes, with different mission. He's famous for changing the forms. So he is also Paramatma. This chapter we are discussing, 15th chapter, is a lot about Paramatma. So Krishna knew that demigods and demons have problems with the churning. So what he did was he infused the mode of ignorance and passion in them so that they could work harder. The demons, they act on the mode of ignorance. They might be very powerful, they might be able to have great sense enjoyment as well as demigods, but the main modes that they're governing their activities are modes of ignorance and passion, and mode of goodness for the demigods. So the Lord appropriately increased the effects of those modes within the demigods and the demons. So when it is kind of magical thing, you know, he empowered them in this way to be able to churn the ocean of milk. So this is another way how Krishna appeared in this pastime. Then when they're churning, they're successful. Okay, now they were empowered, they're strong, they're starting to churn, everything is starting to happen. Different things started to appear from as a result of the churning. There was a horse. Who took the horse? The horse was taken by, this is the horse named Urushrava, something like Urushrava, also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. And then there was an elephant. Elephant was taken by Indra. And there was also, there's many different things that came out. Some nice things. Tulasi came out. Lakshmi Devi came out. And when she came out, everyone lined up. And they wanted her to choose who will she marry, because like every single man there was thinking, this is just the most beautiful woman I have ever seen. And who she married, I don't know, I forgot the detail, sorry about that. Next time I'll do my homework a little bit better to Lakshmi, yeah, but there's pastime in this regard. Of course, Lakshmi is always choosing Vishnu for marriage. I think she chose Narayan. There was some pastime that Lakshmi chooses Narayan and not Parashuram. I forgot. Anyways, Lakshmi was there and everyone was completely captivated by her beauty. She of course united with some form of Krishna. And then Lakshmi, we can consider Lakshmi was involved. Lakshmi is Lord's personal energy, right? She's not material, she's transcendental energy of Krishna. So this is, we can think of another form of Krishna here. And then there was another form first there was like the poison happened. They said, what should we do with all this poison? And Krishna, I think, in some form instructed them, ask Shiva. There was an instruction there that they should ask Shiva to take care of it. And Shiva said that, okay, I will take care of it. The desire of the Lord has to be fulfilled. So Shiva is famous for drinking that poison which happened as one of the side effects of the churning. That's why Shiva has a blue neck, blue mark on the neck. Often he is shown with the blue mark on the neck. There's also Ganga water coming on his head, like this is also one of his last times. So Shiva drank the poison, and then important thing is that Dhanvantari brought the another form of Krishna, brought the nectar, I wanted to say poison, brought the nectar of immortality. This nectar of immortality is not literally bringing immortality, but is bringing great powers to some and extends the life on heaven, in heaven, extends the duration of life. Not many people are qualified to drink that nectar. So extreme powers and ability to enjoy heavenly life are results for this. So whoever would get this nectar of immortality would simply immediately become the most powerful personality in the universe. That's why it's called nectar of immortality. Although it's not literally that causes that the body will not die. Dhanvantari, another form of the Lord. And then who appears after Dhanvantari? There is problem because the nectar is here and demigods and demons, they're fighting for the nectar. No, we'll take the whole thing. Allow us. We take all the credit for this whole thing that happened. So the whole nectar belongs to us. Both sides claim that they should have, that they have right to have the entire bottle of nectar. And then who appears? Mohini Murti, another form of Krishna. So now I think we're getting to the point that if something has to be happened, something is to happen, or there is something, some goal has to be achieved, that we can learn from this story that it is that Krishna is involved in some way, that we are dependent on Krishna, directly or indirectly, if we are aware of it or not, we depend on Krishna. So then Mohini Murti was like so captivating to everyone that they entrusted the nectar to her, and they said, okay, you do whatever you like with this nectar, because this nectar doesn't mean anything to us when we see you. You're so incredibly beautiful, so incredibly attractive, captivating. But that was Krishna himself form in a female form, and in the most beautiful female form. So everyone was captivated and entrusted. And then, of course, she favored the demigods. However, one of the demons, Rahu, he figured it out, said, they won't trick me. And then he sat among the demigods and somehow covered himself so that they wouldn't recognize him. So when Mohini Murti came and when she started to pour the nectar of immortality in his mouth, then someone recognized him. This is Rahu. He has no right to drink this nectar. And they chopped his head off. And Rahu is still floating close by the earth. He was standing between the sun and the moon. Yeah. Oh yeah, Rahu, for those who don't know yet, Rahu is, when we look at the eclipse, solar or moon eclipse, that is Rahu who is covering. It is the dark planet. It doesn't have any illumination. It's not giving any light. Because Some stars and planets in the universe, they don't give any light. So we see how Krishna was present throughout the whole thing. Krishna is present in this way. I thought this would be a nice story to say. There's also other ways how Krishna is present in lives of specifically devotee. Krishna is obliged to take care of a devotee who is depending on him. He says in Bhagavad Gita, okay. Well, believe it or not, I just opened it here in half a second. obviously, the Providence wants me to pronounce this verse properly, so the first page I turned to open as this verse that I wanted. Ananyas Chintayantamam, this is verse from 9th chapter, text 22. It's important verse. Prabhupada mentions that this is how Brahmins live. This is high standard. Ananyas Chintayantamam, ye janah paryupasate, teshamni chabhi yuktanam, yogakshemam bahami aham. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. So this is high standard that devotees follow. They always depend on Krishna. And in response, Krishna is obliged to, and he's promising here, and he carries what they lack, those who depend completely. Ananyash, where Ananya means having no other object. So they only depend on Krishna, whatever danger or good and bad is there. Also what is good is coming from Krishna. What is bad is coming from Krishna. So Krishna protects what those devotees have and carries what they lack. So this means Krishna is very attentive about taking care of devotees. He would do anything that would bring devotees to him. Ishavasya idam sarvam yatkicha jagatyam jagat. Another verse. Tena taktena punjita magridaha kasya svitanam. Those, how is it exact translation? Okay, this is not Gita, this is Ishopanishad. Important Upanishad, for at least for us. One of the 12 main Upanishads, Ishopanishad, has only 13 verses. This is the first verse that I cited. And speaks about how those who are sober and those who know the true meaning of everything, they understand that whatever belongs to them, whatever is there in existence, that all that is the supreme proprietor, the supreme owner of everything, including the body, including myself, including the state where I live, including the house where I live, including the apartments and everything, whatever we are, whatever we possess, including money, including whatever is dear to us, that is a supreme owner of that is Krishna. And person who understands that everything belongs to Krishna, such a person is never disturbed, is free of greed and lust. So another way that we can look at Krishna being the owner, he's taking care of his possession, and he's giving to people, to others, whatever they need, basically. Whatever, everything is is basically taken care of by Krishna. So everything belongs to Krishna, and it should be seen in connection to Krishna. From same Upanishad, Ish Why am I forgetting Sanskrit verses? Maybe because I'm not repeating them constantly. Okay, yes, tu sarvani bhutani atvanyeva na pashyati sarvam bhuteshu chatmanam tato na vijugupta-se gupta tato na vijugupta-ye. Everything is connected to Krishna. Krishna is within everything. Every living soul is part and parcel of individual soul, part and parcel of Krishna, belongs to Krishna. Whoever sees like this never hates anything or anyone at any time. So Krishna is connected. Krishna is within everything. And he is also outside of everything. So instruction in Bhagavatam goes like that: one who is sincere and true seeker of the absolute truth of Krishna should seek for Krishna directly and indirectly. This is the verse 2nd canto, 9th chapter, verse 36, I think. Somewhere there around. 9th chapter, definitely. 30-something. 36 or 35 verse. Directly means that one should understand that Krishna is present within everything. We looked today in one nice example how Krishna was present. Krishna is also present as Paramatma. He's present everywhere. Not even a blade of grass moves without his permission. So he's aware of everything, past, present, and future. So this is one aspect, one way how we look, only one out of many ways how we can look at, how we can remember Krishna. Whereas the other one is direct. Means that when we chant Hare Krishna, when we see a deity, when we directly approach Krishna, these are two important ways how we can see Krishna. Within everything, nothing is separated from Krishna. Nothing, everything is connected to Krishna. Simultaneously, Krishna is also individual person. So both things are there. The hand of the Lord is everywhere. And the Lord himself is everywhere. But he is also separate. He's always in his abode, spiritual world. So we can think of him as if he's present in this world, in whatever we do. Whatever is important, another verse says. I'm not going to remember. Everything should be seen in connection to Krishna. Otherwise, what is the verse? What I wanted to say now? Directly and indirectly, okay, with that previous verse. Oh, if it's not seen in connection to Krishna, then it is illusion. It's a reflection. It's illusion. That's the definition of illusion. Things are not seen in connection to Krishna. Oh, yeah, we can see Krishna as something above the three modes. He's always above the three modes. But he's also within the three modes. Because he's present everywhere, so we cannot separate him. So whatever happens here is also him. But he's also outside, beyond that. He's both. To deists, that wouldn't be. Deism means that Krishna created the universe and then he left. He has nothing to do. One of his fallen angels, who became rogue and took over the place. But it's not like that. Krishna is present because he is only present in, he is only powerful, omniscient also. Omnipowerful, all powerful and so on. Yeah, I just wanted to finish. Anyone have anything to say? Yes. So today we learned that Krishna is taking care of everything. Prabhupada ki jai, Gita ki jai. Vishnu Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.